a very good Wednesday. And happy Hanukkah, race fans. 3 days into Hanukkah, and I'm just getting around to to wishing everybody, to the celebrants, a happy Hanukkah. It occurred to me last night, actually, lighting candles. I said, you know, Monday was day one, really, and I didn't mention it. So we were lighting the candles last night. In fact, I lit all three of our family menorahs, and I put up the greetings. So a happy Hanukkah, everybody. And people love that. I did it a few years ago. Tina, unbeknownst to me at some point, bought a very modern menorah. Actually, Mike Pence might have found Tina a big help. she knew to buy one that had room for eight candles and the shamus. Hey now, oh yeah, good golly, I'm hot today. It's a minute in. that was actually a very funny thing the other night. If you didn't see it, yeah, it was well intentioned. You can't, you know, points for trying to pander to Jews. I've got three of them that we've accumulated over the years. The first one my parents had in the 50s, which we had into the 60s, and then the one that we, you know, kind of grew up with, my brother and I, which is a long, the original one is brass, like painted blue, or enameled with blue, and you can see the brass is kind of coming through. I mean, it's, you know, it's 75 years old, and that was the first one. And in fact, my name, I must have taken it to school at some point, because my name and class is written on the bottom in magic marker. It always makes me laugh. And then my mother bought a kind of a Scandinavian style, like a long wood bar with the candle brackets. And that's the one we kind of grew up with, 70s and 80s, you know, sort of a Dansk style. And then Tina bought this beautiful, I mean, just gorgeous, highly stylized, modern-looking contemporary menorah. So I put up all three. I lit the candles in all three. And so best wishes to everybody. I have not made latkes yet. I asked Tina. Usually she jumps at a chance for my latkes. And she was a little ambivalent. She, you know why? Because she had cleaned the stove while I was away, while I was gone. She cleaned up the whole stovetop. And she knows, I think, that you break out the oil to fry the latkes, and you're looking at a greasy mess. So I think that part of her kind of cool reception, I mean, for years, she would ask, "Are you making latkes?" But she was a little, kind of sniffed at him a little bit. So I don't know. I by all rights, I should, just because it's part of the ritual. A little sour cream, a little applesauce. We'll see. Anyway, got a few things to do today. The midweek session as we lurch toward vacation. The California portion of the trip, you know, we were on Pacific time, what, over a week, 8 or 9 days, and it wreaks havoc with your sleep. I'll tell you, yesterday morning, I it's very unusual for me to wake up and then go back to sleep later, but I did, and I was going to say, well, I got the vacation week coming, and they'll be great. But at the same time, we got the grandkids, got the grandchildren are coming again, so we will be doing, you know, we'll do a lot of the cooking and so forth. Looking forward to it. There will be a ham. I've already got the ham. I'm a pork loving I'm a pork loving Yid. There is not. I and my mother was too. ribs, bacon, nice spiral cut ham. Might do the Coca-Cola glaze. Coca-Cola makes a great Coca-Cola and some cherry jelly together. Yeah, a little brown sugar, a little clove. Yeah, we might go that route. Do not use that packet that they put in with the spiral cut ham. Make your own glaze. It takes 10 minutes. Easy as can be. Dr. Pepper, a terrific base. Coke. I'm sure there's other options. It's not terrible what they give you, but it's grainy. To me, it's always grainy. First, I tried it one time, and I learned my lesson. Because it's gritty and grainy, and yeah. Make your own glaze for your ham. All right? Then pineapple, if you want to do the pineapple and the maraschino cherry, that there's nothing wrong with that. The traditional, you know, old school. Kick it old school that way. But no, I everything but the squeal for me when it comes to although I'm not a pork chops I don't get. I don't care for that. Pork tenderloin I love. Love me some pork tenderloin. Ground pork mixed in with the ground beef and the veal for the meatballs. Yeah, pork. It's so underappreciated. And yeah, the era of trichinosis is gone. You don't have to worry about that anymore. That went out with the with the covered wagon. My favorite that terrific Simpsons. You know the Simpsons episode where Lisa becomes a vegetarian, and Homer is incredulous. How can you not eat meat? No ham? No, Dad. Bacon? No, Dad. No ribs? No, Dad. That's all the same animal. And to which Homer says, "Sure, Lisa, it's all from the same magical animal." it's one of the great. I haven't watched. I really have not watched The Simpsons in 100 years. that one going back. That's got to be from, I don't know, fairly early on. Sure, Lisa. All right, we're going to get Dick Powell in here because we've got. I do want to play some Happy Valley, our last opportunity, and there's only two races left, so we got to get Dick. Actually, Case, reach for Dick. Go ahead. Why don't you reach for Dick if you could? So that I can play the races live. We're about 5 minutes to the eighth race, the late double. You know, the last month, give or take, they've had this later post, and as a result, we haven't had a chance to do these pick threes that we had been doing. So there's the two divisions of the Saturn Handicap to close out the season. So we'll get Dick in. We'll do some of that. We'll get some of Dick's late season. End of year thoughts as well, and I did get the Eclipse Award program, as it were, the PPs. You can print them out off the internet too, and the internet version that they send us does get updated, as opposed to the printed booklet, which has got, I think, goes through only through December 4th, so it misses quite a bit. And including the Springboard Mile and the Trapeze, but Starland and the Futurity, but it's got the majority and gives you a base to which you can operate. And this 3-year-old, the 3-year-old situation with Epicenter and and Cyberknife and Taba. It feels like, you know, the obvious players. Then, you know, the Rich Strike equation. Then I've even seen people talking up, you know, the international 3-year-olds, modern games, and so forth. So we'll see from the turf perspective. But it sure feels like you got enough to work with the high-quality dirt campaigns of Cyberknife, Epicenter, and Taba. Dick Powell, good morning.
Steve, good morning. Welcome back to the Great Northeast.
Thank you. It's only slightly colder here than it was in Oklahoma, California, and Arizona.
So how was Oklahoma?
No, it was fabulous. I mean, both, not just fabulous, you know, for the racing part and getting back to Remington, but as I've mentioned, a very moving experience at the site of the Murat Building and the Oklahoma City Bombing Memorial, National Memorial. Incredible. And then I found a burger joint that will be a focus every time we go back to Oklahoma City, Nick's Grill. So it was great, and they've got, you know, it's such a great facility. The racing is the priority at Remington, and the casino is, you know, it doesn't take I won't say a backseat, but it's not like most hybrid racing casino facilities.
It's a very good balance there. It really is.
I guess. Well, is there enough time for you to give a double here to this eighth and the ninth? Sure. Real quick, well, a double, and then we'll concentrate on the ninth.
Eighth race, you got two solid favorites, the 2 and 3. I'll just go with the 3. I think he's about 3-1 now. And if you want a price, I throw in the 4, who has really good speed. I don't know if he's going to hang on. But I'll try to beat Nakona County, number 2. And the 3 is breaking from the 12, which you don't like seeing going this distance. But he has tons of speed, and I'm sure Luke Ferraris can get over. So going to key the 3 and play him with the 4. And then in the ninth race, the 11th, second time starter, but already probably going to be odds on. So you got to use them. And then I'll use them with 3 and 5. So you're looking at doubles, 3, 4. We'll leave out the 2. 3, 4 with 3, 5, 11. If you're able to play a double. If not, in this race, I would key 4 and maybe back them up with the 2 and 3 on top.
Well, Red Lion at 3. The second choice, Red Lion at 7-2.
And Zach already has 2 winners tonight to go with his previous 64 winners. It's just ridiculous. So he's already killing it tonight, and probably will do so in the next 2 races. But this little configuration really makes it tough on the 12. Obviously, the 10, 11, 12 got a major disadvantage. So let me quickly look up... they give you the barrier information. So, for instance, when the rail is at this position, C, post 10, 0 for 32, post 11, 0 for 24, wow. Post 12, 0 for 20. So I think that can do it from there, but that's asking a lot. You're going up against a trend. It's hard to win there because they get out. And then they got that quick turn, so you're already out there, and any chance of winning, you've got to be on the engine. I think Zach knows that, and this horse showed really good speed in its first start, and then last start came from off the pace and missed by a head, so that's number three, Red Lion. And then the speed horse is number four, Happy Sharing, who I think Luke Ferraris can make the lead and hopefully can make the lead without too much effort. If he's not on the lead, the five might come over on him, but I think he gets a nice trip. At the price, he's worth following.
Yeah, you mentioned the five. That's Yo Beauty, Cruz, and Hamlin, and we've been involved with that horse over the course of the first half of the season, actually, a couple of times. I think we've encountered Yo Beauty.
Yeah, and he's always in the money, and if you use the form guide, you realize that two of his last five starts came from post 12 at Happy Valley, and he still ran second by a neck, and last time out, or two times out, he was second by a half length. So he's solid as can be. He fits this class level. 126 is not a lot to ask. He does have to overcome post 10, but I think he'll get out and be involved early. And we've seen a mix of runners tonight, off the pace, on the pace. So, yeah.
Well, they're getting ready to load. The favorite, though, is that Nakoni County, the two for Casper Founds and Hugh Bowman. And actually has taken money off that morning line. 7-2 currently on Red Lion. Happy Sharing, you mentioned the four that will show speed. Just dropped a tick to 14-1. And Yo Beauty is 7-1.
You cover here in Hong Kong.
Just getting ready to send them. We're only going three quarters here.
Harry Bentley combining.
This is the Saturn Handicap.
3.5 to Cody County. He'll be about one of the last ones to load away. Race number eight. The Cody County for Hugh Bowman, who's had a run of second placings tonight, comes in 3.5 the fave. Ready for action. Off now and racing. Gee, Yo Beauty, he flew the machine with a great deal of pace. And from his stall, he's going to cross from barrier 10 to lead and find the rail. Happy Shearing handy. Telecom Speed deep into the first turn. Divine Shining down on the inside, followed by Starbright. Two lengths to Nakoni County and Leslie. Aerial's three out around Armour Eagle, who's a little keen. Sky Forever back on the inside. They went back with Red Lion, but he is wide. And then came Between Runners, the last of them, as Summit Cheers getting a little keen between runners. Below the 700 metres, and the leader is Yo Beauty. He was fired out from barrier 10 by Antoine Hamlin, and he leads the way by a length. Happy Shearing stalking him, followed in third by Telecom Speed on the outside. Next is Divine Shining. The newcomer's in a good spot at the 400. Star Bright, Nakoni County, Leslie further back in the field with Armour Eagle, and Red Lion's got a lot of ground to make up. Yo Beauty, the leader, shows out at the 200 metres, and he's got a really good kick here. There's a line of about six chasing, including Starbright, Armour Eagle, Leslie out wider, the leader Yo Beauty, Armour Eagle, Starbright, Leslie, Yo Beauty, Armour Eagle. Very tight, I think Armour Eagle might have got it on the post here from Yo Beauty and Leslie. Starbright in the centre, a little unlucky, it got tight for him, and Nakoni County not far away. Sky Forever, Divine Shining, Red Line, Telecom Speed, Aerial, Happy Shearing, and at the back, Summit Cheers.
It's going to be the outside. Oh, boy.
Going to have to leave it to the judge.
Holy cow. Dick, this, going to have to I got to tell you, this may be a dead heat. Armour Eagle came flying, and right before the wire looked like the winner, but then by the time the next bob was underway, it looked like Yo Beauty might have either hung on or they're hitting the wire together.
Wow. And they do this thing where they come back and show the frame-by-frame advance to the wire. And why can't every track do this? Come on. We watch races. We don't know. You know, they show us a million replays and none of which determine anything. So this one's so close, it's, as they say, it's gone to the judges. My first glance was I thought the 6-1. And when they show it, it's like, the cameraman's on the 5, so.
Well, they're both. They also showed. Yeah, they know they showed the 6 coming back at first, but when they did the slow mo replay, then it looked, the second pass looked like Yo Beauty may have come back at him, and actually Yo Beauty ended up at 8-1, went up a tick, and Armor Eagle 13-1. So this exacta is going to be healthy with both Red Lion and Nakoni County. Nowhere to be found. Red Lion was left with way too much to do, and in fact, Purton had to wait off the turn at the top of the stretch, and he was sort of, I think he was waiting for the horse in front of him, which might have been Armor Eagle. Here it is now. Armor Eagle. Is it Armor Eagle that he's waiting to clear? I think it is. I think it was. And in fact, he could not quicken at that point with Armor Eagle.
Right.
I'm telling you, when they showed it that second time, Dick, it looked to me like they were on the wire together at the absolutely, yeah, both noses. Now they're showing the 5, and they're congressing some.
Five,
yeah.
5-5-5-1. 5-6-9-1.
All right. 5-6-9-1.
And give Antoine Hamlin credit. He left the gate. He made the lead. He got over, and then he tried to get him settled, which he did. Now, he didn't get the 4, did not challenge, and 4 actually backed up in the stretch. So that expected pressure just wasn't there. So the 5 just kept going, and then the final cavalry charge came. But it was not enough by the narrowest of margins. So, Yo Beauty certainly well deserved victory. They're all out there, 109.36, pretty quick for this division. So, yeah.
All right, 8-1 over 13-1 with a 5-1 and a 7-1. Mutuals are going to be good with the 2 favorites, and actually even the 3rd choice, Leslie. Was Leslie the 3rd choice? Yeah, 2-1, 3-1. 5-1, yes. So 3rd choice is the only near favorite that is involved. All right, that's the first half of the Saturn Handicaps, and we'll come back with another one in 20 plus minutes, and take the opportunity before we look at in detail at the nightcap, the last race we'll take of the year. From Happy Valley. Dick, few news and notes. I haven't had a chance yet. I'm waiting to hear from Eric Hamelbeck, and don't know yet if we're going to have an opportunity to talk to Peter Eckebert yet, the general counsel for the HBPA, but a bunch of machinations yesterday as we were wrapping up the show involving HISA. And that includes another attempt to slip the bill under the door in the middle of the night. And the alleged one-line fix that is being proposed, essentially to give the FTC more power in the oversight portion of their responsibilities revolving around HISA. At first, in the first pass, there was no mechanism for FTC to change any of the rules that were offered to them by HISA. Essentially, their role was a rubber stamp. That, to some legal minds, is what constitutes the unconstitutional aspect. We'll see, because certainly HBPA says, Peter Eckebert says, it does not change anything about the constitutionality of HISA. So simultaneously to this Mitch McConnell engineered addition to the omnibus spending bill that is looking to avert a government shutdown Friday, Senator Grassley from Iowa has also advanced a piece that would extract this this part of the bill. So for Grassley, it may be his most important legislative action since he voted on the Spanish-American War.
Been around a little bit.
I couldn't resist, Dick. I'm sorry. I can't help myself.
They got the Senate is well for years. The Southern legislators always had an advantage because they would win a re-election and build up just gigantic seniority. So you just had the same people as the head of this committee and that committee because they built up just monstrous seniority. Trying to, what's the guy named? Rivers. What was it? I think he was big in defense, and somebody else was big in this because they're chair of that, those committees, and they were there forever. So, you know, if you're contributing money, you know you're getting your money's worth because this person's not going to lose either in 2 years or 6 years. So, yeah, Grassley's been there a while. And I'll tell you what, how I remember, you know, Liz Holtzman and Jacob Javits and that Schumer one, but Schumer's going on, what, five terms now? I mean, he's built up the seniority quite a bit. Which, you know, politics aside, helps the region. When the region had Joe Bruno and the New York State Senate, this region prospered because you had a very powerful person running the Senate and was in a negotiating position on all legislation, things like that. So, yeah, Grassley did what he did. I'm reading last night, and I'm reading that letter from Chuck Strieler, and it's just so sad. It's, I don't know, sad. It's infuriating. Like, they still paint the horsemen who are against it in a certain light, and then they paint this recreation of history that, you know, we've listened to everybody, and well, okay, but you just started listening to horsemen. You wrote the legislation, and then you listened to horsemen. And the perfect example is the shoes. It mentions how we fixed the shoes. Well, had you reached out and had a proactive process instead of this reactive crap that they've had, you wouldn't have had to fix the shoes because all the farriers would have told you, no, this is all screwed up. You got to fix this. But no, they went ahead, did what they did, and then when it was really bad, then they listened to, you know, the other side. But why wasn't, quote, the other side there from day one, drafting these things so that they would be correct on the rollout, not have a rollout that then everyone says, no, you can't do this, blah, blah, blah. Okay, maybe we'll fix it, maybe we won't. But just the same attitude that if you're against this, you're not in favor of modern-day drug laws. And just, man.
Yeah, well, Eric Hamelbeck's going to join us, Dick, after we wrap up, and we'll get Eric's piece of this, and
I wish they would identify the law firms that worked on this, and when the Fifth Circuit ruled. And you had Eric on, and you had Alan Foreman on, and Alan gave a very dispassionate view of the timeline and everything else and how they were told this was bulletproof. In other words, the attorneys that worked on HISA said this is bulletproof. This will survive any constitutional challenge, and it did not. Now, who were those lawyers? They still get paid, Their lawyers, my guess is yes. I can handicap that race. But it was just like, why couldn't you get this right in the first time? Why couldn't you have written the FTC part correctly so that it would be bulletproof? You know, it's just, but we're supposed to have confidence in everything they do. And we'll see what happens. I'm sure there's going to be more court challenges from everybody. And this won't go away.
No. And far from, far from any decisions being made and instituted. And of course, what you're referring to is Charles Sheeler's, pretty much headed up the board until Lisa Lazarus was hired. And Sheeler has a letter to the industry today in TDN that has taken up the mantle of being the conduit between TDN and Blood Horse. Huh?
Did they ever disclose why Mary Scolay stepped down? Because they announced three new appointees to board, including Barry Irwin. But then they also mentioned, and these three people are no longer on the board, and one of them is Mary Scolay, who I thought I saw at the symposium. And I'd never read a word about, was she just there to get the thing off the ground? It was just odd that no one even asked, well, what happened to her? You know, she was here from there.
Well, I don't think she...
No, she's not.
Well, no, she may have been... That may have been a administrative kind of a move. She's the program. She's the whatever the title was of the HIWU side of things.
Now, when I come on weekly, can you create a title for me?
Yes, we can. Absolutely, we can create. We'll think of something. Director, you want to be a director?
Well, but then there could be many directors, and I could be one of many.
The Jets
lose to Cincinnati because the backup to the backup tight end goes 50 yards on a fourth and inches. So he was the backup to the backup. All right, I like that. That's not a bad title, you know. So come up with something not really glamorous, but fits the bill.
All right, I'll work on that. Something that's befitting of your historic perspective that takes into consideration all your long experience. All right, I'll work on this. The first show of the year next January 4th. We'll bestow sort of like the Wizard of Oz bestows those titles on the characters at the end. At the end when they come back with the witch's broom. We'll doer of good deeds and so forth. That's great.
Everyone else, everyone else got these titles, so why not me?
Why not you? Dick, a couple of thoughts too, end of the year kind of things, including two things actually. Before I ask you about your eclipse category thoughts, your reaction to the Graded State Committee. We spent a good portion of yesterday between Hammer and Andy. We spent about a good hour actually, kicking around some of the challenges that the game faces overall in terms of, balancing what's appropriate and how many stakes and how many graded, how many grade ones, etc. And, you know, it does feel like, you know, the graded stake construct is insulated from some of the realities of and pressures of the game, you know, based on headcount.
Yeah, I don't think they went far enough. I can't argue with what they did. But I don't think they went far enough considering, number one, fewer horses stalled. Number two, fewer starts per year. I mean, we just don't have full competitive fields in many of these races that have been given these grades. So I know that's a very subjective thing. I know they use a lot of objective data when they have the committee meetings, and they have all the data about the stake races and how they've been going the last X amount of years and, you know, stuff like that. But I just think that it's part of the con game of the breeding industry that we want to give out black type. We want that page to have black type on it. So you can get black type relatively easy compared to what it should be. And they all seem to buy it. You know, the salespeople don't mind, and the buyers don't mind. The people buying the horses don't seem to care. They seem to fall for it. So I don't know this, but I wish they had cut more. I watch races, and clearly this is not a graded race or whatever, hanging on by its threads. And then others really do have a place, and no matter where they run, you know. And I can't disagree with the Cigar Mile. I mean, to me, you move the Cigar Mile into December, and sure, we didn't on that last year, I think it was, and just not the race it had been, and Woodward's been bounced all over the place, and yeah. Wish they'd have cut a little bit more. Maybe, no, I'm sure that's going to be the trend, like, to reduce, but they're doing it pretty slowly.
All right, let's swing around to. Actually, before I do that, I want to bring up that same thing I did with Andy at the end about the grass and the turf, because you certainly, you know, we've talked enough about turf racing as part of our international discussions, and I think Chuck also made this point too, that you know, that we're, you know, that running all these grass races and throwing this money at grass races is, you know, coming at the expense of what our signature product is, which is dirt, classic distance, dirt and speed. Any thought on this? And at the same time, Dick, we with as much emphasis on turf racing as we're doing, we're not necessarily, you know, we got some isolated turf horses that are being produced domestically that, you know, can mix it up with international, the international set. But, you know, clearly we're behind on that front. Thoughts?
When Naira, Martin Panza, and Chris Kay decided to have these three-year-old turf races, and not the worst idea, but if you understand international racing, you're getting third stringers at best to come over. So we go out and we make the races $1 million. And I'm like, how the F can you make these races $1 million? And how are the horsemen approving that money out of their purse account to go for races that whose stated goal is to attract international runners? So I'm like, what a colossal waste of money. Money that should be spread out through, you know, throughout either the overnight program or the regular stakes program. Yet that was done, and I don't see where it was ever successful. We could have gotten the same horses for $500,000 purses, and I was dead set against when they did that. So I thought that was exhibit A of throwing money at turf races, but more importantly, throwing money at international horses that come to New York to run for New York purse money, because it is New York purse money. I think sometimes people forget, where does that purse money come from? It comes from either New York bettors, not all New York bettors, but New York bettors, and then national simulcast bettors that are betting on the New York product, and VLTs. And VLTs are in New York, and no exceptions, every single person who pressed the play button was in New York when they did it and was probably a New Yorker to begin with. So why are we trying to? We have enough international racing, and to have a race like an Arlington Main or a DC International to try to get international horses, fine. But then to have three filly races and three male races at these exalted purses, I thought it was awful. I was dead set against it. And then it raises my issue, which is if you're going to give the Saratoga Derby $1 million, the Alabama, not $1 million race, but that's just me. Because we then, you know, when you go back to the dark ages, 2013, and we hire a guy who knows nothing about racing, and in retrospect, they hired a guy who basically knew nothing about nothing. And he goes and hires a race secretary who knows very little about New York racing and its traditions. Well, this was very likely to happen, and it did. So hopefully we can fix that, but man, we were just throwing. And it was at the peak when the VLTs were generating the most money for New York, and there's this inside baseball story about the 1,000 best VLTs at Aqueduct were given to Nassau County on a political deal between Governor Andrew Cuomo and Senate Majority Leader John Flanagan, and that really hurt purses, because when you look at the gaming reports, which I do constantly, the win per machine that goes to New York Racing dropped because the 1,000 best machines went to Nassau under a quirk that Genting took advantage of and prospered. So I don't see our purse level. What in the future is going to raise our purse level? This is pretty hard. But we did have growing VLT revenue, and then that got lopped off right from the top. So no recognition that this purse money that's coming from the VLTs is pretty precious. It might not be at this level forever. So why wouldn't we be doing everything we can to enhance the local product and make sure the people that are loyal and stable in New York and race in New York benefit?
Yep.
That was the whole idea. Now I'm going to go down another rabbit hole that I love to go down. That was the whole idea in 2001, the VLT coalition that got the legislation passed. And let me go back again. It had nothing to do with 9/11. It had already been, it wasn't passed before 9/11, but we were in great shape, and the New York Racing Association was not part of that coalition and was actually against what we were doing because they had their eye on something else. So this concludes today's walk down memory lane. And various rabbit, you know, Festivus, you do have an airing of the grievances.
That's right. Why not? Yeah, you got a problem with these people.
Oh. all right. We're going to post that the quickly.
Yes.
Hong Kong. Let me get the updated odds because I used the Hong Kong forward odds.
The horses wearing the 1-2-3 are all the favorites, really. Excellent Piers 4-1, Super Fortune 9-2, Winning Icy 5-1. They're going to leave from the 7, the 11, and the 5. And then you got the 6-5 favorite, Nordic Dragon, that's leaving from the 8 hole, wearing the 11. That's Vincent Ho with C.S. Shum.
Wow, 6-5. He was brilliant in his career debut. And the handicap felt also because he moved him up 11 points. So if he would have gotten the normal 5-6 points from winning, he still would be in class 4. Now he's up at the bottom of class 3. That's why he's in with 119 against, 135s and stuff. So they moved him up 11 points. It was very, very impressive. He's the son of Star Spangled Banner, who's the sire of California Spangle, and a three-year-old, so he might even have a future in the four-year-old season that's coming up very shortly next year. So, but the five I like, and the five's not taking any, 11, that's not bad. The nine I liked a little, that's 18, that figures, 11 I like as the chalk, and the three has some potential in here. So I'm going to just go straight exacta 11 over 359. Hope it's 5-9 instead of 3.
Well, Nordic Dragon now down to even money. And what'd you say, the 5? 359.
Yeah, 3's 5-1, 5 is 11-1, 9 is 18-1.
Very good. There you go. All right, about a minute to post. Go ahead.
Well, as long as I've gone down, how many rabbit holes? 5, 6? This is a record. How about being accused of something and you defend yourself and you go through the process and you win and the big bad gaming commission steps in and says, no, you didn't win. We're not going to listen to our own hearing officer. They did it with Linda Rice. They did it now with Orlando Noda. And they did it with Richie Gezer. Now, Linda was not going to be exonerated. She was going to serve a suspension, which she readily would have done. And instead, they gave her 3 years, which obviously she has to fight. And she got it into the court system, which is lengthy and expensive, but still, her ability to make a living is at stake. And then Noda, I don't know the facts, but whatever he did didn't seem to have witnesses. And then Richie Gezer, it's laughable. I mean, I was with him last week, but it's Kafka.
Yeah. Well, we launched into it the other day and last week, and the whole thing is, in fact, I had a very good reference to it from someone. I don't want to put them in the crosshairs, but the abuse of authority, essentially, is the term that they applied to it, and it's very accurate. It's what's Richie? What's his? Does he have a next step?
Karen's going back, and after that, don't know. It's so effing un-American. You have a process. It was the Gaming Commission's process. It was the Gaming Commission's hearing process. It was a hearing officer appointed by the Gaming Commission. Four times during the hearing, the case should have been just thrown out. But we have one person, a common thread, probably owned by his junior, and somehow the five voting members of the Gaming Commission roll over and deny justice.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just when you I'm friends with all three lawyers, I know some stuff, you know, whatever. But it's just, even from a distance, this felt, you know, and will continue. And also a bunch of people in the race office have been fined, and I don't know if they were suspended. And I don't see any evidence that their employer is looking out for them in terms of paying their fines, which they should in all cases here. So
no, it's an incredible and just insane scenario. With every incident is more outlandish and preposterous than the last. And then there's just the rank and file meat and potatoes stewarding of races that is subpar. So it's a disaster, and don't know what breaks the, you know, the loggerheads that lets it continue. Disgusting. Here we go. We're just about set for this group.
The eyes, the fielder. They're ready. Racing. Away they go. Folds missed the start. And Glorious Starlight was just on the move before the off, and he gets back with Elon also. A lot of speed here. Smoky Bear charging forward over on the inside of Nordic Dragon, and Super Fortune's being cast three out into the first turn. Followed by Winning Icy, who stalks the speed fourth. Then came Scotch Tycoon, two to Lucky Archangel, Glorious Starlight. Two and a half further lengths back in the field to Hyper Dragon Ball, followed by Elon, Excellent Piers, Folds and Golden Link last of all. Must be 15 or 16 off the lead, and that is Super Fortune, but he's really been made to work, and he leads off the back by two. Smoky Bear, three lengths to Nordic Dragon, Winning Icy. Scotch Tycoon, okay, needs an out over on the fence. Lucky Archangel next at the 400 metres. Some of these at the back would want to get a wriggle on. Turning for home, Super Fortune, Smoky Bear, Scotch Tycoon. The favourites moved up though. Nordic Dragon, Winning Icy out wider. Lucky Archangel, Nordic Dragon, he's taken the lead. Down to the last 100 metres. Winning Icy, Excellent Piers is charging up the rail for Bowman. But it is in front. Nordic Dragon executes the victory to perfection. That's two from two. He's a nice horse. Excellent Piers has run second. And then third, we had Winning Icy with Golden Link right down the outside. And also, we're close up there, was Lucky.
So, favorite with authority, Dick. And that Excellent Piers for Frankie Lohr and Hugh Bowman. Very nice rally up the inside. Winning Icy is going to be third in here.
Yeah, the one was the high weight. So he carried 135, where the winner carried 119, and as he said at the wire, Nordic Dragon, he's a nice horse. He really is a nice horse for Danny Shum and Vincent Ho, and I'm sure he'll work his way up. And you have to, in order to get into the Hong Kong four-year-old series, you have to get your rating high enough. There's no cutoff, but you want to be, obviously, in the top 12 or 14. Otherwise, you're probably not going to be able to race. So he's currently at 63. He wouldn't be easy again. I'm sure he'll be in the 70s after this race, which will mean another race against Class 3 but with 10, 11 more pounds. And he looked like he did today, handily. And that leader from, who was he? Super Fortune. And he really used, that was a smoke in the first quarter. 23.26, I think it was. One of the fastest of the whole year. And he was hard used on the front end, and you saw him pay a price when they turned home. But the winner, never in doubt, is just a matter of who was going to get up for second. And it was the excellent Piers who carried high weight but did save ground.
A good nightcap to the action at Happy Valley, our last opportunity to take in live Happy Valley racing on this final week of the season. Finally, Dick, some wishes to extend out to everybody for the holiday season, New Year?
Yeah, I'm not a real Christmassy type person. Have a good one, everybody. I don't have those Hallmark moment type thoughts. But I still have that. I'm still airing my grievances. When I get through the grievances, maybe I'll.
You're not done. You're going to carry them all the way through to January 1st.
This afternoon, my wife gets back from Florida. We get to see a bunch of the grandchildren this evening, and then we'll see them all on Sunday, and hopefully the storm they're talking about doesn't create too many travel problems for people. And then at Chatin, there's no racing on Christmas Day, so the racing this week is Friday night, early Saturday morning. 9 turf races, 2 all-weather races. And 1 point, Steve. Matthew Chadwick had an injury and is out for months. So he was having a really good season, and he's just, unfortunately, it's going to really affect his whole racing season. So he suffered an injury. I think it was in the morning. And it's too bad. And all the big news. The Stewards' Cup coming up on January 29th, not that far away. A Grade 1 mile is going to track California Spangle, Golden 60, Romantic Warrior.
Huh.
That's going to be spectacular because they have they have a series of handicap races for their Triple Crown. And the first leg is at a mile. So we're probably going to get all three stars of the night from the Longines races a couple weeks ago all back in one race. So that should be, that's like awesome. And then we'll be heading to the four-year-old series coming up soon. So I always try to make mention of like this last horse is a three-year-old. He'll be four, and hopefully can join the fray and be one of the better four-year-olds next year and all that. So, yeah.
Excellent. We'll look forward to it. Hope they all get there healthy. Dick, best wishes. Happy, healthy, and we will talk to you on the 4th.
Thank you, Steve. Right back at you.
Dick Powell, everybody. HKJC Racing, top of the hour, and we'll take the first break. Come back. We're going to slip Eric Hamelbeck in, as promised, and Eric will inform as to where things stand with both the attempts by Mitch McConnell to include what the HISA team believes is a legislative fix for HISA regarding how the FTC administers to the agency, the authority, and he'll let us know what HBPA's position continues to be, as well as what Chuck Grassley is attempting to do to extricate that portion of the legislation. And, of course, this is all, a lot of this is speculative because it's all moving you know, behind closed doors, as they say in Albany, three men in a smoke-filled room. But if you saw Peter Eckerberts, the general counsel for HBPA, he rightly keeps reiterating the other, you know, the other intrinsic issues that don't go away even with this one line adjustment to the FTC's role in the interplay with ISA. So we'll get Eric in for a quick hit, and then we'll turn to Sid Fernando. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill and Dale. With just days remaining in racing, of course, there is some opportunity for the stallion races to be affected by, particularly by Santa Anita's rich slate between the 26th and the 31st. There's plenty of stakes. There's plenty of stakes that dot the calendar elsewhere. So might not necessarily. I suppose it would take quite a few maiden wins to impact the freshman sire race among the 2-year-olds. And I don't think there's a ton of 2-year-old stakes between now and the end. I mean, there's a few. The Fairgrounds has got the Sugar Bowl and the Untappable, and the Letelier as well, actually, and the Gunrunner.